Welcome to the Green Screen of Death. My name is Adrian. I'm here in Austin, Texas, on day four for Fantastic Fest 2015 edition. I'm here with my good buddy Will Lindis from Movie Bear Podcast. Very happy to have him on as a guest co-host, and it's our first guest co-host, so this is very exciting for the show. So Will, why don't you say hi to everybody? Just a brief introduction. Tell us what you're all about and tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. It's a lot of fun to be your first guest co-host, so I hope to do the audience proud. Like you mentioned, my name's Will. I'm with the Movie Bears Podcast. You can find us at moviebearspodcast.com. We're on all the different social media sites, so just look for us there. Who are we? We're a bunch of, big gay dudes like movies. Yeah. It's like, it's weird. It's like that's our niche. That's our audience. And if of course, here we are here in Austin, Texas. This is my hometown. I'm glad to have you here. All the way from way up north.
Yeah, that's right.
It's good to see you at festival time.
Yeah, man. It's great. It's awesome. And we first met in the express line for South by Southwest this year. And I told you earlier, and I haven't had a chance to tell Jim, so I'll take this opportunity to say, Jim was the hook for me in your guys' group. He has just such a friendly face, such a nice smile. I was just like, hey, this guy seems cool. And we're like, oh, in the express line again. And then we started talking, and then here we are. It's awesome.
Yeah, and thank you to Jim for that, because you've been a fantastic friend of the show ever since we met back at South By. Yeah. Jim's totally our social dude. You know, like, when it was line time, I was all about, like, okay, I got to get this for the roster. I got to get this. Okay, this is the next thing online. We got to get this at noon, this at 2 o'clock. And Jim's like, I'm just going to go talk to people.
Oh, yeah. He's super chill. He's awesome. You guys are all a great bunch. Love Brad to death. Brad's the one who always makes me blush.
He's
a good guy.
Brad's the one that always makes me blush.
Yeah. Yeah, just a quick heads up. This is the first episode. I'd love to have two. I'm not sure what I'm going to do for the second episode. But this will be a Frankenstein episode, just like last year. We'll be recording here and there whenever we can, because we don't always have a lot of time between screenings, right? So we're just going to bang out a review or two here and there and just go from there. So are you ready to get into it?
Oh, my God. Born ready.
All right. So Will's familiar with the format. If you're listening, I hope you're familiar with the format. We have a brief intro, then we get into some rant action where we rant about anything movie-related. So I've got a bit of a rant that's Fantastic Fest-related and festival-related in general. So the opening night movie is The Lobster. Played like gangbusters. I went and saw it just because I was dying to see it. It had a second screening scheduled, but they pulled it off the schedule. It's probably a distribution thing, but I know a few people were actually planning on seeing it the second time. So for them, they're screwed, because they're not going to see The Lobster, and I'm not sure when its release date is going to be. But yeah, they got screwed out of seeing The Lobster. They wanted to see it. They didn't want to do the opening night crowd. They wanted to see it on the second, whatever. It sucks. I hate when that happens. That almost happens at every festival I attend. So it's kind of rolling the dice with the big films. But, that's my little rant.
It does suck, though, because there are people that, are just flying in on the first day that, because of the way that the lottery system works here for getting a badge, or for getting a spot in a film, maybe you're not able to get into it the first time. And that's okay. It'll play again on the second half. You've got your second showing. So they only do these one screening movies. It's like, if you're not in it, you got to wait till release date. At least this one has a distributor, so people will be able to see it at some point.
Eventually,
down the line.
Yeah. So you've got a rant, right?
Yeah. Okay, so this is going to be the first guest rant, and I'm ready for it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so this is also festival-related, Fantastic Fest-related. Sleep is an extremely precious commodity here.
Oh, yeah.
Over the course of these 8 days, I did the math. It's going to be like 37 movies I'm going to see.
Sweet.
Yeah, so that means I'm getting home at like 2:30 a.m. I'm waking up at like 7:38 the next morning to come back around and do this the next morning.
Yeah.
So when I'm planning for the next day, a lot of time I'll look at the screening times and use that to make my decision.
Oh, yeah.
So a few times I've been kind of screwed by a weird glitch in the scheduling system where there'll be a couple of midnighters that are playing in the same slot, but one will start at like 11 p.m., one will start at like 12:15, and I'm thinking, well, if I do the 11 p.m. showing, that gives me an extra hour and 15 minutes of sleep. Sign up for it, and then the next morning when we get our assignments, they'll have swapped the times, and now that, you know, precious 11 p.m. screening now starts at like 12:15 or later. That's rough. That's wrecking hell on my body.
Oh, it's brutal, right? And your goal is to see a movie in every slot.
Every slot. That's without hardcore. Fail. It's hard. It's hard.
And you did that last year, right?
I did it last year. It's like there's something that happens around like day five or day six. Like, this is like a hallucinogen. You're just, your whole new normal becomes movies.
Yeah.
That's all that you live, breathe, to the point where, like, after the festival, the first day afterwards, I'll probably go see a few more movies because my brain is shifted. Like, it's I have to have like narrative stimulus.
Oh yeah, cool. Right on. Good rant, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
That's my rant. Yeah,
that's wicked. That's Green Screen of Death history right there.
Woo.
First guest rant.
I'm glad to have done it. I feel good. Got that off
right
my
on.
Chest.
Yeah, get it off your chest, man. Yeah, we've seen a bunch of movies. We're on day four. Out of the movies we've seen so far, I thought it would be fun to talk about Anomalisa, a film we saw early in the festival. Charlie Kaufman co-wrote, co-directed the film. And man, is it ever beautiful. Stop-motion animation. Let's talk about Anomalisa. All right, so Anomalisa, what were your impressions of the film? And lay down the groundwork for the audience who may not be familiar, because this is a very niche festival film that, you know, it's not going to reach a wide audience. But it's been picked up by Paramount. They're going to distribute it. So anyway, why don't you lay down the groundwork and would you recommend it, etc., stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. So Anomalisa, first thing you need to know about this movie is it's a film made by Charlie Kaufman. This is a guy that may not be familiar to all movie fans, but when you start talking about some of the films that he's pinned, you'll start to have those like, oh yeah, that guy moments. This is the guy that was responsible for writing Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Being John Malkovich, Adaptation, a personal favorite movie of mine, and a few others. Second thing you need to know about this movie is it is all done in, to me, quite splendid stop-motion animation.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the best that I've seen. This is a story, definitely to avoid like spoilers and stuff like that, because this is a film with a definite hook that we could accidentally ruin for audiences. But this is a film about a man who's struggling to find someone who stands out from the rest of the crowd, who, you know, who he can see himself spending more time with and not just blurring into the background of the minutiae of his life. It is an extremely poignant movie. It has a few good dark laughs in it, but mostly what it gave me was a good case of the feels. It made me think about like what it is to like find a partner, not just to find that relationship, but how to nurture it and what it means to be with that person over a longer period of time. And I love this movie. I definitely recommend it. I think that there's going to be a lot said of certain scenes in the movie. I think people are probably going to trivialize parts of the movie because it does get into some territory that will make people laugh in kind of an uncomfortable way.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to avoid saying, I think you know exactly what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
I know what you mean. Yeah, there's some unexpected moments where you're like, I wouldn't expect to see that in a live action film.
Yeah.
On the big screen. But here it is in its full glory on the big screen. So, I love it too, man. Like, what I loved about it is there's a lot of tiny little personal touches. I think this is how Kaufman keeps you interested and hooked in the film. Is like, it's got a lot of relatable things, whether it's going to a hotel shower and not being able to get it the right temperature.
Right.
You know, he burns himself and then it's too cold. And, you know, the idea of being socially unsure of yourself, that lack of self-confidence or the full confidence somebody has, how do you find that balance? And it's got, I think this is like so deeply personal because the performances are very, I found them to be very naked performances. So the main cast is David Thewlis. He's outstanding as the lead actor. Jennifer Jason Leigh, she plays his love interest. And Tom Noonan has a bunch of voices. And we'll be obscure about that.
Yeah.
But Tom Noonan, all three of them do a fantastic job. This film just rocked me in a way I didn't see coming. It's, as you said, all the feels. It was beautiful. It was very touching, very funny, very sad. Like, it examines all of the things that make relationships great while still examining the fragile elements of relationships and keeping things fun and interesting and, you know, the honeymoon phase, if you will, and all that stuff. It just had so much going on in such a short period of time. And it's stop motion, so this was in production for years. So I loved it.
Oh my gosh. And what was so great about the stop motion itself was it's extremely naturalistic. A lot of times you see a movie like this that has some sort of animated element, be it hand-drawn, CGI, stop motion, whatever, and they play around with that as an excuse to go wackier, to go into kind of like crazy territory. And while there's a few things in here where you can tell they definitely use that to their advantage, mostly this plays extremely naturalistic. Like, I could have seen this played out with an actual physical cast.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that they went the way they did really speaks volumes for the vision and the willingness to execute on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrific. It's one that, as I was watching it, I was like, I'm not sure how an everyday audience is going to react to this, because we're all here at Fantastic Fest. We know what we're getting into. We know we're going to see some challenging films. I can't wait to see the public's reaction to this film. I can't imagine it'll open on like 3,000 screens or anything, but it'll definitely. I think it has. Is it late December or something? Late this year, I think they're releasing it.
I didn't see the date. I know that, like you mentioned before, like Paramount has it, and they're. And everything that I've heard, it seems like they're kind of being tentative with their release dates. Like, yeah. I imagine it's going to start relatively small, see what the reaction is, and expand from there. And you're right. Like, this is not going to be a multiplex film. You're not going to see this, like, going up against the, you know, this is the Oscar bait movie, and this is the new Transformers action blockbuster.
Yeah.
You know, this is definitely more, you know, art house theaters, things along those lines. But I think with the Charlie Kaufman name behind it and with Paramount's backing, I think it's going to be one of those limited release films that has a better chance of at least hitting a few more screens than some of the others that just disappear into nothingness after festival time.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's one you definitely need to seek out. I don't know. I don't know what else to really say about it other than I just love it to bits. As of this recording, it is... Hang on a sec. I've got my ranking of films here somewhere.
Oh, perfect. And you're doing this on Letterboxd, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Letterboxd.
Yeah, it's great for that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's my top film right now, as of this writing. Top film. I don't know if you're ranked in any yet. Or
I have my rankings, and some of it, these numbers will change a little bit post-festival when I can think about things outside of the context of, like, cheering crowds and how much coffee I had in that screening or what have you. But right now, as of the time of this recording, yes, it is my number one from this festival. And I remember we were talking before, I guess not to get ahead of ourselves, about some of our other high picks so far. And it seems like we're kind of calibrated, and that's exciting. That's exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Any closing thoughts on Anomalisa?
No, I think that this is certainly something that if you do see it available, you should check out. I would also recommend keeping an eye on, like, Amazon VOD or any of those, like, paid VOD services. You know, see it now while it's in theaters, because this feels like the type of movie that will almost assuredly pop up in one of those formats. So even if you don't have
format,
so if you don't have an art house theater near you, I think you're still going to be able to track this one down, and you should, because it's really
totally
good.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, so that's Anomalisa. We both recommend it. Check it out when you see it. Cool. So let's move on to the next film. Let's talk about The Lobster. It's the opening night film of Fantastic Fest. Only played once. That's it. One and done. As this one has distribution. Did you want to talk a little bit about the premise of the film, and then, again, your initial thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So, The Lobster. This is a dystopian future or near future movie, which, hey, it's a genre film festival. You're going to have one or 20 of those. And what's so neat about this one, to me, is that it really explores the concept of what it is to be either in a relationship or to be single. And again, spoilers are abound with this type of movie. It has some really creative looks. But basic premise, this dude is recently single. And in this world, when you're recently single, you're shipped off to this hotel where you have 45 days to find the love of your life and to form a working partnership. If you do, great, you can rejoin society. But if not, you're transformed into an animal. And of course, the name of this movie is The Lobster, the animal that our lead here, Colin Farrell, very subdued Colin Farrell compared to what he normally does, a lobster is the animal that he may turn into. This movie is really funny. This is a nice little dark comedy, and it certainly goes into some really, really bizarre territory. This is another one where I'm strongly recommending it. It's extremely high up on my list in terms of what I've seen here at the festival. I wonder how it's going to play with general audiences because it gets into some really bizarre territory. But then I think, you know, movies that have a similar... Like Terry Gilliam movies tend to do fairly well in the box office. And he's another guy that can kind of play around with, like, sci-fi, like, dystopian, kind of a weird, warped premise. And those play pretty well. So I think this is something that may have a better shot of opening on a few more screens and people going and showing up to it, especially with Colin Farrell leading the pack.
Oh, yeah.
I think that star power is going to help a lot. I know this is going to be a love fest, and part of it's because it's festival season.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, we're seeing movies that we absolutely adore. In an environment that we absolutely adore. But hey, this is another one that I strongly recommend you check out. It was really cool. What did you think?
Oh, totally. I loved it. Yeah, it was funny because while it's dark satire, a lot of it's grounded in reality. Like, I said this to somebody, I can't remember, it might have been you or somebody else, but we've all been on both sides of the fence when it comes to being alone or in a relationship. When you're alone, like, sometimes that's a really bad feeling. Other times it's not so bad. But sometimes you're on the outside looking in, and there are times when couples, whether they know it or not, feel like they're superior because they're in a relationship. That's one of the things I took out of it, and that society kind of places them on a higher pedestal than single people. Because single people in this movie, in this world, are outcasts, like quite literally outcasts.
Yeah.
They are, to the eyes of the society, they're disgusting people. And, you know, some single people may not like that. And the cool thing is the director doesn't say this is the right way, this is the wrong way. He just presents two sides of the coin because you get to see both sides of being single and being in a relationship in this film. I think there's a lot of truth in a lot of the things they say, you know, compromise, telling little white lies, just saying things to make the other person happy, how much of that goes on in a relationship, being truthful. Like, it's what I found is that, like, from my own personal experience, when I met my wife, Sarah, not once did I ever have to feel like I need to be a certain way or act a certain way, talk a certain way, do certain things. I just stayed myself, and she loved me for that, and I love her for who she is. And there's just so much going on in The Lobster. It's outstanding.
And I would imagine a lot of, like, what makes a relationship successful, like in yours, it's probably not because the two of you share every single characteristic. It sounds like, you know, at least for my take, when I've been in my successful relationships, my current one, very successful, it's not because we have identical matching personalities. It's we have some commonalities and we're able to counterbalance our differences too. And that was one of the interesting things that I appreciated about this movie is, while it didn't take a side in the single versus relationship, one thing it did try to hammer in was the fact that some of the artificial similarities that we try to look for in our relationships, like, I need to be in love with someone who matches this exact characteristic, otherwise we won't work. Some of those things are very artificial, and
some
of those things don't work out in the real world. This is a very nuanced movie in its take on relationships, and I love it counterbalanced with the one that we just spoke about earlier, Anomalisa. Like, I've been finding a theme of kind of relationships and what makes love work in some of the films we've seen here at this festival.
Yeah, there's a lot of examinations of relationships going on at this festival. I think that's probably deliberate in a way, like, and I love it. We just saw this one called Lies of the Fox Fairy.
Oh,
and it was wonderful. Beautiful. Wonderful film. All about relationships and being alone and being with somebody. But yeah, getting back to The Lobster, like, the cast throughout this film is just outstanding. Like, we mentioned Colin Farrell. He plays the lead.
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly is in there, and he has a lisp, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Ben Whishaw, is that his name?
Yep, Ben Whishaw.
Yeah, he is really... He has deadpan humor in this. Just he's hilarious at that. There's a maid in the movie called Ariane Labed. She was in Before Midnight. She was the young woman in Before Midnight at the house.
Gotcha, okay.
And she is just wonderful and beautiful and spectacular in this film.
Raquel Weiss.
Yeah, that's right.
She's what I liked about her was she played a character with a lot of both strengths and vulnerabilities, which I think is kind of the cop-out answer when you're talking about like a female lead in movies. Like, she's strong and vulnerable, but it really actually fits here. She got to play a character that wasn't just one thing. She got to play a character that had her own personality traits that relate to the film, not just to her relationship with the lead character.
Yeah. Yeah, and Leah Seydoux is in this. Michael Smiley and Rachel Wise. There's just... This cast is awesome. I'm a big sucker for an ensemble cast. This is shot beautifully. The set design is incredible. Like, that hotel is a character on its own.
Oh, my God, yes. I loved the setting of this. I loved the world. Like, everything feels very, very... intricately made, intricately shot. Like, there isn't a piece of the set that feels arbitrary.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And it's just so funny, like, how they portray... getting back to the couples aspect, just to give you an idea of what happens in this hotel, when they do find a partner, each of them gets a larger wardrobe, so they have better, more clothes to choose from. They get a better place that's got more space. It just leads to a better life. And I think that's hilarious. Like, in the beginning, how they say, like, being with somebody is better than being alone.
Oh.
And, you know, not everybody feels that way. And I think that's what this film's going for, is that some people like to be in a relationship. Some people like being alone. Like, you don't need to... You just be you, you know, just... Find whatever happiness you find, and if that's with somebody, great. If it's by yourself, you know, great. You know, that's one of the things I took away from the film.
The grass is always greener, right? Like, you know, that's one of those things that we hear all the time. And I think when you're single, you're always looking at the idea of, like, I want to have that partner, I want to have this other thing. And when you're in a relationship, you know, even a successful one, there's probably times where you're just like, oh, I just wish I had a little bit more freedom, or like, it'd be great if I could just stay out an extra hour and not have to check in. Like, it's one of those things. Like,
oh, yeah.
You're always kind of looking at what the other person has and being envious or being jealous or what have you. And here, I think that whether you are currently single, in a relationship, in between, wherever you happen to be, I think you're going to find a lot of truth in the way that both aspects of being are portrayed here.
Oh, yeah. And the last thing that I wanted to mention personally about this film, the idea of going from becoming a human to an animal, whatever animal you choose, I found that terrifying.
Oh, my God.
I was like, you know, and they've got a countdown, right? Like, they've got 45 days. They've got ways they can extend their stay. We won't talk about they extend their stay. But when the countdown's on, it's just so dreadful. And the transformation, we see, I'll just mention that we see at least one person in their human form, and then you see their progression, and then you see on the next day they're an animal.
Right.
And I thought that was just so sad, because, like, they lost everything about being human, like, what makes us people. You know, they can no longer watch movies or, you know, catch a cab, go downtown, hang out with friends. They're an animal.
Yeah.
That was so sad. That's all I had to say. For my last things I wanted to say about the lobster. But, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I did. Like, especially after, like, after I wasn't a big fan of last year's opening film, which was also a dark comedy body horror transformation into an animal thing, Tusk.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I almost skipped this one for it, and I'm glad I didn't. But I guess the last thing I really had for you is I had a question for you, Adrian.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So if you had to choose which animal you were going to be transformed into, what would you pick?
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, this one. I haven't thought either, so I'm going to have to scramble to answer my own question.
You know, I'd probably pick an eagle. I'm from the Northwest Coast. I'm on MNBC Canada. Eagles are beautiful creatures. I've seen one up close in the wild. It was one of the most amazing moments of my life, and I've always wanted to fly. So to be an eagle flying around, I think that would be beautiful. And to be admired, because eagles are admired by people. Like, you see people posting pictures on Facebook and Instagram, saw this eagle, and how cool would that be to be worshipped by humans? So that's my answer. I didn't think about it till now. How about you?
Oh, so that's a really good one. Like, and what's interesting about that one, too, is like I was originally thinking like a bird, but I'm like, oh, man, I'd probably get eaten by an eagle. No, I think it's the easy answer, and I think they even make a point of this in the movie. Like, I'd probably go with the dog just because I'm a human being. I'm a social animal. Like, I enjoy being around people and having those interactions, and I think... Being a dog, I would at least have the chance of, like, having a good master, being, man's best friend, all of that stuff. I could probably come up with a more, like, game-the-system answer if I did enough research. Yeah. Like, this particular turtle that lives, 150 years or something like that. But I'm going to go with the dog.
Cool.
But, like, a cute, cuddly, like, I'll probably be adopted and not, like, a stray type dog.
Yeah. Cool, man. I think we've said enough about the lobster. Definite recommendation from both of us. And again, that one's been picked up. I forgot which distributor has it, but it will be available. Okay, so yeah, lobster, high recommendation from both of us. And you just looked it up. It's been picked up by Sony. Was the Sony Pictures
Classic?
It
looks like it, yeah, with Alchemy as the independent distributor under its umbrella. So
yeah. So it will be available eventually. We don't have a release date, but keep your eye out for it. The lobster, it's wild, it's crazy, it's fun, it's beautiful. I loved it.
It's a great movie.
Cool. Well, I think we're going to cut it off here. We're going to get back to the show. But through the magic of editing, you won't know. You'll have no idea, but we're going to get back to another review of something else and... We'll finish off the show.
And we're back. No, just kidding. We're going to go see more movies.
Okay, so we're back to our third final full review for Fantastic Fest here. Episode 1, 2015 edition. The first two movies we talked about, we both loved, right? We were just over the moon. So I thought it might be fun to talk about a movie that maybe we didn't see eye to eye on.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Yeah.
Things could get nasty here. I'm just kidding, of course.
No, we're going to throw down. Bags on the ground. We're going to trade blows on this one.
So we saw High Rise together, right?
Yeah, we did.
You know,
we did.
That's what we're going to review, High Rise. What's interesting is I could tell while I was watching the movie that you weren't vibing with it. You were sitting right next to me, and I could tell. You looked like, I don't know, your body posture just didn't seem like you were, like, right into it. So... That was interesting for me, just to catch that out of the corner of my eye.
Oh, and vice versa. Like, I could tell you were. Like, there was a moment you're kind of, like, leaned forward. You were making little noises of, like, you know, like, I'm liking this.
Yeah, I do that a lot. It's funny. Like, when I get it right into a movie, I'll howl if I find something funny. Sometimes I'll fist pump, and, like, at the end of a movie, if I really enjoyed it, like... I may catch some flack for this, but Man of Steel is a film I love. Uh-huh. And when it ended, I really felt that ending. She's like, welcome to the globe. And I was like, yeah. And I did that. That's exactly what I did. I was like, yes. And I was like pumping my fist. And then I went on Twitter and I was like, oh, everybody hated it.
I feel that though, especially like, you know, you get this rush of energy, like here at the festival, you know, a movie ends, you start doing the applause and all of that. The weird thing is going to be like going to a regular movie, like outside of the festival, like you're going to start to applaud at the end of it and go like, you're not supposed to do that.
No, we don't do that here. And you're only going to see that one movie that day.
Yeah.
So because we're recording outside the parking lot, you might hear some of the hubbub and skateboarding going on. But it
all
should
kinds
be fine.
Here. Yeah.
It'll be all good. So, yeah, we're here to talk about High Rise. Why don't you talk a little bit about the premise for some of our listeners? Because going into this, I knew little to nothing about it. And I'm guessing our listeners will be in the same spot. So what's sort of the groundwork for High Rise?
Yeah, so couple things you need to know about High Rise. First thing, which wasn't super important to me, but I know is very important to a lot of people, this is based off of a fairly well-regarded J.G. Ballard novel. Haven't read it, not really familiar with the source material on this one, but yeah. I know there's a lot of buzz coming into this one. Like, this is one of those unshootable movies. And they shot it.
Yeah.
Second thing you need to know about this is directed by Ben Wheatley, who is very well known here at Fantastic Fest. Yeah. This is his, I believe, fifth film to play here. Previously did a Kill List and Sightseers, Down Terrace, and Field in England was the last one from 2013.
Yeah.
He's an auteur director, the type that really plays around with avant-garde style and structure in putting together his story. And I think for me, that's a bit where some of the things, the seams fall apart here. The actual story is about this high rise, go
yeah.
figure, right?
Yeah.
Tom Hiddleston is our main character. And as he moves into this high rise, there's a power struggle that happens between the people that live on the lower floors, you're kind of just normal people. And the people that live on the upper floors, the kind of the more well-to-do, the people that control the power. And as this divide becomes more and more intense, it almost becomes like a post-apocalyptic story within this one building.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I love that stuff, like class struggle. I think that's a universal thing. Like, you could talk about class struggle in any time period, and it applies because it's always present. And I think that's what was really interesting about High Rise is this was adapted from a story that's set in, like, mid-70s or something, right?
Yeah. It definitely had that DNA, like, woven right into it. Like, the big mustaches and the bell-bottoms and, like, the, you know, like...
The hairstyles.
The crazy Coke and martini sex parties.
Yeah, like, key parties, pretty much.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, like, this movie has all of the different things that I should have absolutely loved. You know, I love Ben Wheatley as a director. The cast in this is phenomenal. Like, even with some of my problems and the reason I ultimately didn't care for this movie, I love Tom Hiddleston in this. I love Sienna Miller. I think Luke Evans is one of those dudes who I've been really struggling to find, like, him connect to a role. Like, he's a guy that I felt's always been kind of on the verge of being in something stellar. And I think this was definitely, like, his, to me at least, breakout role.
Oh, totally. Yeah, staying on Luke Evans for a second here, he's as close to being the main star of this film as you can get without being the main star. Like, he had a ton of screen time. I just thought every time he was on screen, I was just completely immersed in what he was doing. Because he had a lot of, like, he was calm, mellow guy, he was tough guy, and... In the film, he's like a documentary filmmaker, right?
Right.
And he's shooting stuff. And everything he did, he had so much to do. He had so much on his plate, and I thought he answered the call. I really loved him in this. And previously, I wasn't that big a fan of his. Like, not that I disliked the guy or anything. Just nothing he ever did struck me as, oh, I gotta check out this guy.
Well, I'm right there with you. I mean, I think about some of his previous films. Like, I mean, he played Bard in the Hobbit movies, and... You know, well, he was fine in those, but, like, when you think about the Hobbit movies, you don't think back and, like, oh, man, Luke Evans was so good in those. You know, he didn't really leave his mark in Dracula Untold. He was in the Furious movies, you know, whatever. This is a guy that has been in a lot of things and has never really found his, like, breakout role. He's the dude that's been just kind of on the cusp of that. And,
yeah.
I mean, this is obviously, like, this is not a film for everybody, and... I don't know that this is necessarily going to be, like, his star-making role, but I think it is certainly one that's going to critically put him on the map.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I think the problem I had with it kind of comes down to Wheatley's directorial style. He's a guy that really likes to kind of go off into director land, so to speak. You know, oh, yeah. he's mad director kind of thing. He has embraced the role of auteur, and that works really well in a lot of settings here. I think that it hurt the story a bit in this one, at least to me.
Really?
Like, I felt like it made some of the class struggle a little bit more unfocused than it needed to be.
Yeah.
I could have really used a little bit more time to dig into the Luke Evans character, to play around with what was happening on the different floors. You know, the obvious comparison to this one, and I think a film that was still able to be artistic, but be a little bit more grounded and a little bit more straightforward, was a film like Snowpiercer.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of obvious comparisons here, like, you know, post-apocalyptic confined to one setting. I think people are, you know, if you're listening to this show and you're like a, you know, consider yourself a movie buff or a movie fan, you'll probably like this. Mm-hmm. This was, to me, like, all of the elements were mostly good on this. I enjoyed all of those different things. It was just kind of the final package, all of it together, didn't quite land for me. So it's not like this is like a bad movie or like a rush, you know, avoid this movie at all costs. It just felt like it just needed something more, like, in the narrative, just to kind of like cinch it in and kind of push it over the top for me.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing with it, with basically all of Wheatley's films is, you know, we both have podcasts. Part of what we do, actually most of what we do, is convince people, go see this movie, avoid it. But with this one, it's really hard to say because you get so many different reactions. There are people who are Wheatley fans who are just like, oh, I did not like this.
Right.
You got people who maybe didn't vibe with him before, and they're like, I love this one. I really enjoy that. Here's the weird thing. A Field in England. Have you seen A Field in England?
I did, yes.
It's all over the place.
Oh, my God, yes.
It's a mushroom trip, and you don't know what's going on. And I had a bit of that feeling in High Rise where you're just going, wait, I don't know what's going on here. For me, it worked this time, though. I felt like maybe I'm just getting used to that style with him because his first, like, three or four films, they at least had a bit of a more straightforward narrative. They weren't really broken up. And the thing with High Rise is we're given snippets of each character. It seems like some of them are out of sequence. A lot of them are out of... you don't have a lot of context with each scene. Sometimes you're like, wait, what's going on here? But with that, I felt more intrigued with each scene. I felt like I had to do some detective work while I was watching it. So I love that kind of stuff. I feel like whenever a filmmaker... you know, sometimes... it pisses me off when a filmmaker is like, here, take my hand. I'm going to guide you through this story.
Right.
Wheatley slaps your hand away. He, like, kicks you in the shin and throws mud in your face. And he's like, I'm going to go that way. You try to keep up with me.
You are welcome to join me on this story. If not, fuck it. I'm going to be over here doing my movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of his take. At least, you know, I've never met the guy. I never heard him talk or read any interviews. But that's the way I see him as a filmmaker, at least, especially with the last few movies. But I enjoy that kind of stuff. So
I think a good litmus test for people to decide whether or not to watch this, and honestly, if you're listening to this and you're at all interested, I say watch it. You know, make up your own mind on this one. I think this one is going to be very divisive, and it's really going to come down to your own personal taste, because this is a very experiential film. But I think a good litmus test might be... if you enjoyed or were able to keep up or liked the challenge of something like last year's Incoherent Vice.
Inherent Vice.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm letting my personal opinion on that one shine through.
I love that film.
And so it was the same thing. Like, I felt like that was an amazing film that just, like, the narrative kind of got away from it. I think, it sounds like we have similar opinions on that film as we do here. So I think if you're a person that walked away from Inherent Vice, like, kind of enjoying it or liking what you saw, I think you're absolutely going to love High Rise. If it wasn't quite for you, still give it a shot, but it may not be 100% your cup of tea.
Oh, totally. One other thing I wanted to comment on is just the aesthetic of the film, the set design, costume design, cinematography. He has the same DP every time. The director of photography is Laurie Rose. He doesn't do a lot of other work for other people, but he does every Ben Wheatley film.
Yes.
And I love the way those two work together. So, all the sets were just so cool. Like, they all had a they were all kind of exaggerated, like, what's his name? Hiddleston's character, he's a doctor, so of course his is very, like, high-tech, minimalist, and that helped define him as a character. When you get to the sort of people on the first floor, like Elizabeth Moss's character,
right,
it's kind of a mess. She's a mom. Father is a working man. Or did she? Did I don't remember who was the father? Was it the documentary guy?
I might have been. I think it was the documentary guy.
You see how hard it is to follow this film? It's so hard. But that place was messy. And then you get a glimpse of the rich people, and it's just all plush, amazing.
And not just plush and lush, but like sometimes even ridiculously so.
Ridiculous.
And I'm not going to say, like, there's something on the top floor that is just kind of like, of course this is on the top floor. Yeah. There's no reason for this to be here, but in this movie it makes sense.
Yeah, and everybody laughed at that part.
Yeah.
And the rich people are so full of themselves. They even have, like, an aristocrat party at one point.
Yes.
And it's stuff like that, all the little details, the minutia of this film, I was just right into it, and it's one that I feel like I'm going to have to study it and examine it. I love that, doing that kind of stuff, but at the same time, like, I totally get if somebody doesn't vibe with it, because it is weird. It doesn't make sense most of the time. But that's part of art, right? Like,
sure,
you're going to present it to people, and some are going to like it, some are going to hate it, some are going to love it, everything in between. So
end up on different sides of the map. And certainly this is art, you know, like, you know, I don't want anyone to think that I do not appreciate what Ben Wheatley's putting out here.
Yeah.
I think that this is definitely, this is a guy who always brings 100% vision to the table. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't feel as though he compromises on anything. And when you have a filmmaker like that, you're going to naturally be more divisive audience-wise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're not rounding off the edges. So there's going to be some times where he's going to put out some stuff that I'm going to love. There's going to be some times he's going to put out some stuff that I absolutely hate. But I'll always respect what he's doing.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Did you have any closing thoughts on High Rise before we shut her down for High Rise?
No. Nothing else to add on that one. I think we unpacked that one fairly well.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And thanks for doing this, man. Like I said,
this is so much fun.
Yeah. Like it's tough to record a podcast like on a festival. Like when Bill and me did it the first time, we were like, we went around that corner. We recorded for like 5 minutes. We're like, okay, let's go. Came back. Couldn't record because one of us got called, like what happened to us earlier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. But I guess what we can do is, in the tradition of the format of the podcast, we can get into some lightning round action. So, yeah, if you've listened to the show before, if you haven't, this is the part where we kind of just offer quick lightning round sort of reviews of other films we've seen at the festival. I know I've seen a bunch. So... yeah, I'll open up the floor for you. Just talk about whatever you want, like it, dislike it, whatever. Just give your thoughts and go through your list and recommend some stuff.
Yeah. I think I'm going to stick with just a few things that I absolutely adored that I think people should check out if they get the chance. I've got two documentaries on that list. The first of which is called Dog Legs. It's this documentary about... so in Japan, you've got this this wrestling federation that's all full of just disabled people.
Yeah.
You know, it could be cerebral palsy, several different things. The fact that one of the main guys they follow has cerebral palsy, and it really toes the line on is this exploitive? Is it not? And you get to really follow these different wrestlers and learn about, like, you know, the other struggles that they have in their lives, and a lot of ways how this wrestling league is their release. It's their kind of their place where they feel as though they're capable or they're able to compete and to do this thing that they love. It's a challenging documentary. It's challenging documentary. Some feels.
Feels. I bet. Yeah.
Getting a little dusty in there, but but it's quite good.
Cool.
And the other documentary that I want to rave about is Man vs. Snake.
Yes.
Now, we saw this one together, yeah.
I love this film.
So cool. It's about this this guy who, back in 84, set the world record for this arcade cabinet called Nibbler. The big deal about it was the only cabinet that lets you break 1 billion points. Someone has since beaten his score, and now, however many years later... and He is now trying to set the record again to get his name back on the top of the list.
Yeah.
Such a funny documentary.
Oh, it's,
like,
it's hilarious.
Laugh riot.
Yeah, there's a guy in there, and they, these are all real people, but for all intents and purposes, we'll call him a character.
Yeah.
There's a, the, one of the guys who's out to beat him, at least his score, his name's Dwayne. He's a guy from Alberta, Canada.
Oh, my God.
And he's like a rock star, like, gamer. And his hair looked like kind of like Jonathan Davis from Korn. And
perfect.
He,
it does.
He totally acts like the way you think he would act, too. And he's a gamer. He's like a hardcore gamer. I thought he was awesome. So.
I mean, you couldn't write that character. Like, no. I mean, that's the type of thing. Like, if he showed up in, like, a narrative movie, you'd be like, yep, okay, they workshopped that character, and they really come up with the quirkiest thing possible. Yeah. But this is an actual dude.
Yeah.
And I think this one is... documentaries are hard for people. You know, I know it's not everyone is a documentary person. I think if you're one of those people, like, you know, you've only seen a few that you really enjoy, this is probably a good dip your toes in it, too, because there's always something happening. There's always, there's some animation, some funny jokes, some kind of weird, like, things where the, one of the characters will say something like, oh, I bet you that would never happen, and then they cut to where that thing obviously happens. It is brilliantly edited, and so if you're not a, if you're not like a huge documentary fan, like, this is probably the one to get, to give a whirl and kind of maybe break yourself of that.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of the same people you saw from King of Kong.
Yeah.
Billy Mitchell's in it, and Walter, the scorekeeper, he's in it. Yeah, there's a lot going on. I love that film.
Yeah, it's a definite must-see for me.
Cool, what else you got for us?
What else do we got? So, got two more. One of which I think people maybe already heard a bit about because it's the big gimmick film that people are talking about right now, and it's Victoria.
Yes.
This is a movie that's all done in one take. A story about a girl who gets caught up in some events that, well, really take her through a really harrowing night. What I loved about this movie was when you have a gimmick film like that, you expect it to be kind of brisk, kind of get on with things, and just kind of get to the credits as quick as possible. This movie is long, dude. It was like 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's crazy for that. And the lead in it is, she's on screen, I want to say, I don't know if she's in every single frame, but she's in damn near every frame.
Oh, yeah.
And she is compelling every single moment. So this is, I can't imagine what that type of performance is like, to be on at the intensity that she is for 2.5 hours straight, no breaks.
Yeah.
But, man, I loved that movie.
It's so good. Yeah, I love Victoria. That was just so fast-paced. I love the way it opens. Like, just the groundwork for it. Yeah, it starts in a club, and she's dancing. You get some strobe lights in your face, and you're like, okay, here we go. It's gonna be a fucking party. And then she runs into some hoodlums, and this movie is like, at first it's like a buddy movie, then it turns into a little bit of a sweet romance, and then it gets into some gangster stuff, and then it's heist and pursuit and just all of that all at once.
I was even feeling some, like, kind of in the early parts of the movie, there's even some, like, some of Linklater in there. Just
Of,
like, you know, just two people having a really enjoyable walkie-talkie evening.
Yeah.
And again, with no cuts, no edits.
Yeah. Really impressive stuff. Did you say you have one more?
Yeah, I've got one last one. And this is the one you just got out of. So I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on it, because I've been dying to talk to you about this all festival.
Yeah.
A movie called The Brand New Testament. The poster, the descriptions, everything basically says God exists. He lives in Brussels.
Yeah.
And it's the story about God's daughter. Is this character, this little girl named Ia. It's the same girl. She was also in 2 Days, 1 Night, you know, which quite good. And she's also in her third IMDb credit is Alleluia, which played here a couple years ago.
Oh, no way.
So that's her IMDb, is those three movies. This
those
girl has
movies.
Got an amazing IMDb. Like,
she's great,
no filler.
Too.
But yeah, she realizes, like, hey, God's been kind of a dick to people. Like, he's making things hard. He's making people suffer. And so she's going to go out and try to recruit 6 of her own apostles to try to kind of change the dynamic of things. And she does so. It's a very creative movie. There's a lot of comedy to it, but there's also a lot of heart. Like, some of the apostles have their own little stories. And some of them are really heartfelt. Like,
oh, totally.
Like, you know, it's definitely one of those movies where you'll have that, it's cliched, but it's like, I laughed, I cried. You know, oh, yeah, yeah. You'll do both of those in this movie.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's what I loved about it. With the apostles, they introduce them and they give them a bit of a backstory. And you kind of get like a short film for each one.
Yeah.
There's like so many movies in between. And what I love about the films, we were talking about this just before we started recording, the pace of the film, like they get off to a great start and it just stays there. It just keeps going, builds momentum. And it's tough for a film to do that because it's easy to get a good, great start. But to hold the audience for that runtime, it's a real challenge. Oh, they pulled it off. This is one of the best films I've seen at the festival, for sure. It's just so brilliant. It's clever. The setups are amazing. A lot of things you can relate to, like easy setups for jokes. Like, God's writing all his rules, and he's being a total asshole about it. He's like, almost like Murphy's Law kind of stuff. He's like, you know, the other line's going to move faster than yours.
If you drop bread with jam on it, the jam's going to land jam down.
Yeah, all this stuff that he creates, these are his rules. And it applies to our world. And it's just all so relatable and hilarious. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that one. Yeah, I can't wait to watch it again. So.
And I think it's nice, too, because movies like this, I sometimes feel like it's really easy to toe a line where people that are not religious will enjoy it, but religious people might not, or vice versa. Like, it's going to be, like, you might offend one group for favor of the other, but I think no matter what your views on religion are in general, I think you can appreciate the sentiments happening here.
Oh, because totally.
They come from a place of love, from a place of, like, you know, like, let's be better, let's do better, let's make the world a better place. And that's, I think, something everyone, except for bad people, can appreciate.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Okay, well, did you have anything else for Brand New Testament?
That's all I've got. I want to hear, like, some of the other films that you had.
Okay, I'll go through some of them here. Baskin. Did you see Baskin?
I did see Baskin.
Okay, yeah. It was crazy. I really enjoyed watching it. I said it to a friend of mine who did not have such a good time. I was like, trying to explain why I enjoyed it so much, I said, in a nutshell, I'm a sick fuck when it comes to movies. Like, if there's gore, like, it has to have a reason. And in Baskin, they give you a very good reason for crazy stuff to happen. Like, there's an orgy scene that I don't think I'll ever see anybody else try to recreate, because it was just so gross. Like,
at least not until next year.
Not until next Fantastic Fest. Yeah, it was like people with bandages over their face, blood everywhere, feces everywhere, and all kinds of bodily fluids just everywhere. And it was gross, but I was like cheering. I was just like, yeah, this is so nuts.
Great for a midnight slot one.
It was like, perfect for midnight. Yeah,
it was an interesting one because it played kind of in two parts. Like, the first hour kind of felt like a slow burn psychological horror. There's definitely some fucked up things there, but you get to that last 30 minutes and it's just like, you know, nope, we're pulling out all the stops. We're like, it becomes super, super intense there at the end.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And another one I watched, The Boy and the Beast. Have you heard of that one?
I heard of it, but I didn't see it.
It is really cool, and it's awesome. I'll tie this in with a previous episode of The Green Screen of Death. Bill and me, we attended a 24-hour film festival this year.
Okay.
One of the films I played was The Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
Okay.
And this is from the same guy, and this one is awesome.
Oh, my
gosh. It's very touching, very moving, very beautiful. The animation is outstanding. Oh, hang on, I'll pause. They're not calling yours, are they?
We'll find out. But even if so, I don't think it'll be a problem.
Oh, I think they're just... I'm refreshing. Everything's not ready still.
Yeah, they're probably doing the, like, get the hell out of the theater, or the lobby, or
GTFO.
We won't...
GTFO.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Like, mine will probably be... They're probably about to call mine, but I'm good to wrap up.
Okay. Okay, I'll move to the next one, and I'll just cut all that stuff. Okay. Oh, before I forget, We both saw Crimson Peak. That was the secret screening that played here.
Yes.
Guillermo del Toro was here. He intro'd the film. He did a Q&A, which was awesome. It was cool just to listen to him talk. We're not allowed to really give any details of the film. There's an embargo on it. We're basically just allowed to say whether we liked it, like disliked it, whatever. I liked it. I'll leave it at this. I wish I saw the Green Room instead and waited to see Crimson Peak. But that's my thoughts on it. Did you like it, dislike it?
I did. It's not one of my, like, you know, standouts from the festival. It's not going to be one of those ones where, like, when I go home and think Fantastic Fest, it immediately comes to mind. Except for seeing Guillermo del Toro talk. Like, that part was amazing. But I think it was solid.
Yeah.
Very good gothic romance.
Yeah.
I'll leave it there because we can't get into specifics because of the embargo. But I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, too. Maybe not as much as others, but, you know, win some, lose some. I'll talk about maybe one more. Which one should I talk about? The Keeping Room. Have you seen that?
I haven't.
That's a sort of Western. Talks about war. There's soldiers. I'm not too familiar with American history and stuff, but there's basically
that's
just women. Basically just women stuck in a home. It's a bit of a home invasion, but it's very suspenseful, very very tense. I had sore shoulders after I watched the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Britt Marling's in it. She is outstanding. And Sam Worthington is one of the soldiers.
Okay.
And he plays more of a supporting role, and I like him in the supporting role. Like, he did a supporting role in Everest, and I liked him in Everest and this one. So maybe that's where he's best used, is just a support guy to show up for a few scenes here and there. But, yeah, The Keeping Room is beautifully shot. It just opened this week, I believe, so... Or at the end of this week?
Yeah, it's this is a film that Drafthouse Films picked out and distributed, which is why it's on the roster here. It's out, I believe, L.A., New York right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be expanding to other Alamo Drafthouse locations.
Yeah.
Like, I know Austin gets it, I think, on like the 16th of October. Like, it's coming out in a couple of weeks. Which means also... listeners should, like, keep an eye out on Amazon Video On Demand.
Oh, yeah.
Drafthouse often puts out their films, like, day-and-date release. Like, you can do, like, a $6.99 rental. I don't know for sure when or if they're going to do that, but it's highly probable.
Oh, yeah. And, I guess we better wrap things up. I think they're going to see your movie soon.
Movie number 20-something at this
That's
point.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Where can people find you online? You've got a podcast, Movie Bear Podcast. It's a great show. It's a lot of fun. You and Jim and Brad. It's so much fun listening to you guys talk because it's like we get to hang out. It's like hanging out with you guys without actually hanging out. So, yeah, why don't you talk about Movie Bear Podcast and where people can find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. So Movie Bears Podcast, we are, again, like just a bunch of gay dudes who talk about movies. Not as much from that perspective. We just it just happens to be, you know, our niche and our angle. But really our show is just three dudes talking about movies as if they were just walked out of the theater and said, hey, what'd you think about that?
Yeah.
You can find us on Facebook, Movie Bears Podcast. You can find us on Twitter, MB Podcast. You can find us, our episodes, we record them live every Monday night. So you can find us on YouTube. We live stream there and through Google Hangouts. And then later in the week, we always release once a week on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Movie Bears Podcast. So we're a little all over the place. But our Facebook, we advertise everything that we do through our Facebook. So
cool. If
you're just listening to one way, you know, come to Facebook and go from there.
Cool. Well, thanks, man. And I better plug us real quick. Green Screen of Death. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter at @the_green_screen. I think that's about it, man. Enjoy the rest of Fantastic Fest. And again, thanks for doing this for us. It's a huge honor because Bill couldn't be here. So I was like, I got to find a co-host. So,
damn.
Yeah.
Thanks, I feel honored. This was so much fun.
Cool. All right, man. Peace out. See you later.
All right. See you later, guys.